I love the like story of when Jesus is baptized and the dove appears and God speaks down and he says, "This is my son and I'm well pleased with him." And that was before Jesus's ministry. Like, Jesus hadn't done anything at that point. God's like, "I'm pleased with him already." And so that distortion of God's goodness that tells us rest isn't allowed or we're not good, reality, God even called us very good before we did anything.
You're listening to Upside Down Podcast,
an ecumenical conversation
at the intersection of justice, spirituality, and culture.
We've created this space with you in mind.
So join us for unscripted conversations on God's upside down kingdom. This global pandemic has not only magnified the fractures in our systems and even in our own hearts, but it has caused us to kind of step back and examine what we believe and how that is being embodied in our lives. In this final episode of season 4, we're asking the question, how do we not go back to the way things were before COVID-19 in our country, in our world, our neighborhoods, and our families, and even in our own hearts? Because we don't want to go back to normal. So how can we pursue God's upside down kingdom even now? And maybe even especially now. This is Upside Down Podcast. I am Kayla Craig, and I will be your host in this final episode of season 4. You may be aware if you've been listening for a while, but we take off the summer months and we just try to be really intentional about that. But we'll still be creating special episodes just for our Patreon listeners. So if you're able to give monthly, you'll have access to different things depending on your giving level. And we also have brand new what we call the B-sides. And for those of you who are old enough to remember cassette tapes, that's like a throwback for you. But our B-sides are intimate one-on-one conversations with artists and advocates and activists in God's upside down kingdom. And we'll share one episode in June, one in July, and one in August. And you'll also get access to the previous summer's episodes and a sneak peek to who will be joining us and what we'll be talking about in season 5. So Lindsay, if you want to just pop in quick and share a little bit about kind of how we make things work, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. How we make things work. So our show is 100% listener funded. So if you'd like to throw a couple bucks our way to keep the podcast free and free of ads, you can visit patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast or upsidedownpodcast.com and click give in the upper right hand corner. You can also support us by sharing this episode with a friend on social media, however you do that. And also rating and reviewing us on iTunes is super helpful as well.
That's so true. So Lindsay Wallace, who you just heard from, is the co-founder of Upside Down Podcast. And she's joining me in this conversation today, along with our co-host for season 4, Alisa Molina. Alisa, say hello.
Hey, guys.
And Dina Silberto. Dina, say hi.
Hi, everyone.
So Alisa and Dina, we've talked about this off air, but on air, I also want to say thank you so much for joining us this season. It has truly been a joy and an honor to get to know you and journey with you in these conversations.
Yes. Thank you. We've loved it. I've loved it.
Yeah.
I've loved it. Yes. Yeah,
great to hear. Thank you both.
So before we begin, show notes for today's episode can be found on Instagram, which is really hard to remember. It's just Upside Down Podcast. So there you go. So before we get kind of into the deeper weeds, and this maybe is a little bit honestly in the deeper weeds, but I just want to have kind of an honest check-in. And I imagine we're all across the country right now. Actually, when I ask you this question, why don't you just say where you are for our listeners? Because honestly, sometimes I forget where everybody is because we're not all in the same place. But I'm just wondering, what does life look like for you right now, where you live, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever you feel comfortable saying? But it's May 2020. What is life looking like?
Oh, goodness. I am in Austin, Texas, and I will start by saying my husband and I and our five kids, I think that the best kind of setup that a family could have is kind of how we've lucked into this whole thing. He still has his job. I still have my job. We're still both able to work from home. He is an athletic director, which means he is like every day gives out like 125%. So we barely see him. And so his workload has, as the PE and the athletic person, I mean, all he has to do is come up with like a lesson instead of like run the world. So we've just gotten to see him and be around him and enjoy him. And so as far as like hunkering down goes, we've actually been good because the kids have both of us, and our kids are older, so I don't have toddlers in the house. It would be way different if I was still in toddler land. So for us, it's actually been a blessing in a lot of ways to be together. And I do want to actually just give a shout out to being in Austin, Texas versus being kind of in the rest of Texas, just because I feel like Austin is very much like when somebody thinks Texas, they think like the South and, right. and everything that comes along with that kind of being in the South. But Austin is very different. Like it's very hodgepodge. It's very like everybody's ideas matter. And so the mayor of Austin has just been very like diligent about being very cautious and careful. And I've really appreciated that because it has been kind of scary, I would say, just like realizing that depending on where you're at and how your legislators and your leaders see everything, you kind of are just depend on that. And it could be something that you feel real comfortable with, or it could be something that you don't feel real comfortable with. And and where I feel like we're lucky to be in a place where I like the way that I see what we should be doing right now aligns with the way that the mayor is going about business. So that's a update from Austin, Texas.
Thanks for that, Elisa.
Yeah, I can share an update. I'm in the Bronx in New York City. And yeah, I mean, it's clear that New York has a really high rate of COVID, both sickness and death. But in my world, I'm actually just feeling grateful. Like, luckily, I'm not sick. No one in my immediate circle. There's been some sickness, but no one has like died or gotten. Everyone's healing. Yeah, I've been able to work from home, and just like this was a spring where I had lots of like weddings to go to and a camping trip. And this was just going to be like a jam packed every weekend was like in a new place, like lots of people to visit with and lots of plans happening. And I think I'm hearing in my circles like a lot of disappointment and grief and mourning. And I don't mean for life. I don't mean like for people who are sick and dying. I mean for like our own plans and our own lives and our own routines. And I think this has been an opportunity for me to really step back and say, well, like I like my work and I like my apartment and I like the people that I'm able to like connect with virtually, you three included. And when all of like the distractions and busyness and running around gets taken away, it's actually okay. Like I actually like where I am and actually like the bare bones of my life.
Gina, can you remind our listeners what you do, what your work is? Because I think it's really special.
Yeah. So I work for the Dominican Sisters of Hope, which is a group of Catholic sisters in New York. They're actually in 13 states and Puerto Rico, but they are headquartered in New York about 40, 45 minutes north of my apartment on the Hudson River. So not in the city. And I typically do communications for them, and that kind of like evolved into me being like, the purpose of communications is to connect people with sisters and like get the word out and get people to meet these amazing women. And so that has branched out to me doing lots and lots of programming, some of which I'm excited to share with you three. Everything's free. So I'm not trying to like make money off of anyone. It's just programs that I think are so, so good and so exciting. So
That's really cool. It's been fun to watch you do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in Kentucky, which, just to brag, we were one of the only two states who met the federal criteria for reopening before our governor actually started reopening. So,
you're not getting me started.
I mean, really, he's just doing his job, right? He just happens to be one of only two governors doing their job. So, we need him to call for an independent investigation into an accountability for the murder of Breonna Taylor by the Louisville police. Yes. But we can talk about that later.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So for us personally, my husband and I both had a full-time job and a part-time job, and our part-time jobs just evaporated because of the nature of what we were doing. So we have had some loss of income, but it's not like our main income. So we've made adjustments that, you know, haven't been fun, but still in comparison, we feel pretty lucky. I think just on a micro and a macro level right now, everything is hard. And so I'm literally some days just reminding myself to breathe, you know, to be honest, from like a mental health standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just having to be in the moment, not think about the future, and just breathe. I have always homeschooled my kids. And one of the reasons I do that is because I love them and I like being around them. But at this point, we all need some space from each other.
Yeah.
And so that's been really difficult as of, you know, the last couple of weeks or however long it's been. The last couple of weeks, I've really felt that, like, oh my gosh, I need to get away from these people.
Yeah.
And be around other people, you know, yeah. Like there's that both and of like, I need a break, but I also need other adults and adult conversation and the library. And like, yeah, there's just a lot of things lacking, you know?
Yeah.
So we're ready for it all to be over, but also recognize that we're not going back. Like there's no normal to go back to, which is what we're talking about today. So look forward to this conversation.
Yeah. Are y'all sleeping well?
No.
Because that's one of the things that I can, like when you were talking, Lindsay, I was like, when you were saying, like sometimes I just need to remember to breathe. Mm-hmm. I think that I store everything that I haven't processed in my brain. And so when I try to sleep, I don't ever feel like I'm like my brain switches to off position, like ever. It just feels like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last night I had dreams that were just wild. And one of them was my mom and I walking into the store that ended up being way smaller than we thought, and somebody was coughing. And I had like a panic attack. And I'm like, oh my word, I'm dreaming about this. And like during my day to day, I would say I'm not stressed or I'm not thinking about it, but then I'm dreaming about it. Mm. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, didn't Tasha say that on the podcast? Wasn't she like, I think you asked her, like, what are your dreams? And she was like, last night I dreamed about someone coughing.
Oh my gosh, she did. Oh, yeah. She did. This was happening around the country, probably world. Yeah. I hadn't had any dreams about this until last night. And I woke up like shook, like what just happened? Mm. It was weird. Yeah. But I think, Lindsay, like you said, we're all just like, okay, the adrenaline has worn off.
Right.
And now we're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had one COVID dream, but I am having like insanely vivid dreams every night, like incredibly, incredibly vivid. So I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Kayla, what's happening in Iowa?
Oh, my goodness, guys. Pray for Iowa.
Pray for Iowa.
So, yeah, I feel like cases in my county are rising. Deaths are continuing to rise, and we're opening up. We're opening malls. We're opening restaurants. And it makes me feel really afraid. And it makes me feel afraid for our family because we have two kids that are immunocompromised. But it makes me afraid for all the people that don't get to choose if they go into work, you know, mm-hmm. and because statistics show that those people have
are immunocompromised or have immunocompromised people in their family. And it just, it's really hard because it's also been really lonely for the past 2 months with four kids at home.
Yeah.
You know, really isolating, like all the things you were saying, Lindsay. So I like ache to be out, but I also like really worried and feel like now is probably not the right time, you know, to do that. So it's been hard. Like, I don't think there's any way around just being honest that it hasn't been easy. One of my kids is in diapers and she has a G tube, and just like, we had a village, you know, that helped with some of that care. And so like, to just not have any extra hands ever is really hard. And also like amazing to get to spend so much time together has been really sweet in a lot of ways. But yeah, I feel like I hate to like share about the realness of it because I don't want to feel like I'm complaining or like overselling, you know, because there are always other people that have it harder. And Brené Brown has an awesome podcast where she talks about some of this stuff. So go listen to Brené because she can explain it a lot better than me. But, you know, we're trying to help kids with school. It's really hard. I'm working. My husband's working. We're doing like telehealth appointments, which is an awesome option for like therapy and OT and PT. But that's also kind of hard in its own way. And I don't know about you guys, but I found like Zoom calls with friends are like making me sad because I just find that I'm like missing them. I don't know. Yeah. Do you feel that way too?
We finally had like one of my really close friends, like something happened big at her job, and she's in charge of a very large parish and opening up at 25%. It's just a thing. And I just was like, I'm going to set up a lawn chair like 8 to 10 feet away from me. And you're just going to come over and we're just going to talk like normal human beings. And she, because she's in meetings all day long on Zoom, she's like, I don't want to have another Zoom meeting for like the rest of my life. But yeah, I think that like the human nature, the human aspect of like I tell my brother, there's no way that I can even be in proximity to you and my niece because I can physically not pick her up. Like that just can't happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just think it's human nature to want to be near each other.
I know. When this first started, my dad drove 2 hours. He's now been furloughed, but at this point he just had a day off and he's like stood at the edge of like our driveway. And it was just like, this is the saddest thing I've ever, like, it's just not in our nature to like be so separate from our loved ones. So
yeah
I'm glad that you got to do that, Elisa.
Yeah, that was bomb.
Well, as we kind of dive into this conversation, I think something that this time has kind of highlighted is our culture. And when I say our culture, I mean our Christian culture and our American culture, how it kind of emphasizes our productivity as worth. And I'm wondering if you guys have been, I don't know, have you been thinking about that too, as we've kind of had to step away? Or Lindsay, even in your situation, like you don't even have that option of being productive in that part-time role right now. So what are you guys processing and thinking about that?
Gosh, I thought that I had a handle on my life of honoring family time and centering family and not centering productivity and like go, go, go. But now that it's like forced time at home, I am really realizing how insane our pace is on the regular.
Yeah.
It's astonishing to me. And that's that I felt like we were being really intentional with our time as a family. This has blown me away. Like it has blown me away how much we as Americans just, I knew we were like, go, 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 do, accomplish all that. But like, it's been very eye-opening this time.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel similarly, Elisa, and I still live alone, but I've kind of like family united with my partner, I guess. So we're not living together, but we're the only person the other one is seeing, at least in person. And there was a point during this when he's a doctor and he had 2 weeks off. And I was not off of work. And I was like, this is like the most time that we'll spend together. Like, it's going to be amazing. And I was like, this is great. Normally we're like running around. Like, all I have to do is work at home, which is working on the computer. Amazing. And it boiled down to us having a conversation where he was like, I don't think you're realizing like how much you work. And I think like it's really strange that someone outside of me needed to see that. But like, living alone and working remotely a lot, also like, who would see that? And I was kind of like, I don't work a lot. I like work remotely and I travel and like I do all this other stuff. Like, what are you? I have like a very vibrant social life. And I was like, he was like, do you realize you work like into the night and this is normal for you? And so yeah, even having a much slower pace, and I feel really lucky to have a quiet home and like a monk life, quiet life right now. I've been relishing it. But yeah, it's also come with this like other realization of like, oh, like my normal is normally being on the computer like a lot, and like getting texts and calls for work all the time. And I think what blurs it for me is I'm like very personally close with a lot of the nuns, and I care a lot about the projects I'm working on and like the communities that I'm building and building or participating in. Yeah. And so it's like, also like, where is the line? Like, it's like, well, I care about this, and I'm like, I personally care about these people. Yeah. So I think I'm noticing that I work a lot more than I thought I did. I feel like I need to work more than I realized I thought I did. And there's really a lot of like blurred lines around boundaries.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like there's this kind of American ideal, like a lot of Enneagram experts say that a lot of Americans test as Enneagram threes, even if they're not threes, because of that like push productivity, you know, do, look the right way. And I think like we all have that kind of, if we've grown up in the United States, like just by proximity, we have kind of absorbed some of that idea. I know when we first started social distancing, I was like, oh, well, now would be a good time to like work on the yard, and now would be a good time to like do this or work on this project or do this. And then probably about a month in, I could do nothing. Like, I was just exhausted. Like, my body, my brain, I'm a writer, I didn't write anything. I couldn't even look at like extra work. It was just, it was like, we're not made to do this, and we can push, but it's always going to catch up with us. And I just hope that that's something I can take in when this is all gone and we can all go anywhere and do anything. And, you know, whenever that is, I hope that I remember that and take that into consideration, that my worth isn't tied to how much I can produce or how much I can do, whether that's at home or at work or social events that seem fun. Gina, like what you were saying, like, I have a thriving social life. Yeah. Like, but like, your worth isn't tied to how many times you go out with your different groups of friends and stuff, you know? And so I just hope that, like, for me, that's something I've been thinking about, like how do I, and I'm not trying to like spin a feel good lesson on everything, because like we've already talked about things have been hard, and whatever has been hard to us, there's even been harder going on, people losing loved ones and lots of really awful things happening. But I do hope that that's something that we don't retain as normal, if that's something we can be intentional about.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like the elephant in the room is like, when we're all working remotely, I know some of my colleagues feel like, oh crap, like I know so many people who have been furloughed, I need to like go above and beyond and like well over my hours to prove that, like, to keep my job.
Mm-hmm. And especially with everyone working remotely, it's like, well, you're home all the time, so you can work all the time.
Yep.
Right.
No.
I think another thing that this time, not just at home, well, what this question makes me think about is not just how our culture emphasizes productivity, but how we judge people's worth by what they produce. And I think we're going to get into that a little bit, but how, you know, some of our work, like some of us are essential and we've always been essential, and some of us are just now essential. And it's because those of us who are affluent need you to go out and buy our groceries for us. So there's like different ways to kind of look at this question of that emphasis on productivity as worth and who we deem worthy and who we deem essential, and why is that? And is it when it's convenient for us, right? And what we can get out of whatever the product is or whatever the service is that you're providing.
That's so good. And it just makes me think, like, it's so layered because we're like, you're essential, you need to do this, but we don't care. Like, we don't care about equipping you with, you know, equipment to keep you safe, or we don't care about, like, well, if you just fall out of line and you get sick, we'll just replace you with somebody else. Like, we're not, like, even in us saying like you're essential, we just want the like output. We don't care about. Yeah.
I took to saying that I feel like the way that we are using essential is incorrect. I feel like what we really mean is expendable.
Yeah.
I am not expendable because I have reached this X level of like value, like you say, Lindsay, that the American dream in me has been whatever. But you, on the other hand, you haven't reached this peak, and so you don't matter at the end of the day. You don't matter. And I'm gonna slap the name essential and I'm gonna slap hero on you, even though as many quote-unquote essential people have said, I never asked for this. I never asked to be a hero. Like, some people sign up and that their job is, yeah, I know the danger involved in when I sign up for this.
Right.
But I don't think anybody who is a bus driver decided that they wanted to be anybody's hero.
Yeah, that's so true.
Or a meat packer, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there's a lot to say. We have a lot of meat packing plants here in Iowa, and the cases have been so high. And the people that are working at meat packing are amazing, and they are just being thought of as completely expendable. And the cases are so high. And we have a lot of people in our Congolese community where we live who drive a long ways so they can go work at the meat packing plant, and the cases and they're not getting what they need. And it's just, I mean, just the layers of injustice are stacked so high that it's hard to even see over it. But Lindsay, something I want to go back to that I make sure we talk about is, I know kind of an organization that you have been following, and I think you told me about, and then I started paying attention, and I think like we're all like, wait, what is this? But it's a large organization. Is kind of, and I'll let you talk about this, but the whole core of this organization is kind of rest as resistance. So I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's something I came across on Instagram, and it's called the Nap Ministry. And so it was started by Trisha Hershey, and she's the founder. So it's an organization that examines the liberating power of rest. And they name sleep deprivation as a racial and social justice issue. So it kind of came out of her own experiences with exhaustion. And she has an undergraduate degree in public health and went to graduate school for divinity. So she's interested in both the science and the spiritual aspects of rest. And I just love it because it challenges everything I thought I knew about not just self-care, but also, I don't know, just like living into that whole idea of like, Jesus got a way to rest, right? So like we should rest, and thinking I knew what that meant, but really following them has challenged me to think about it more deeply. And in that sort of like racial justice, social justice way.
So is there like an example of that? Like, how does that make you kind of
view things differently.
I think it's the constant, I wish I could pull them up on Instagram while we're talking. I think it's the constant challenge of our bodies as a commodity. And what I mean by that is that we, like the American dream basically says, like, you go to school, you achieve, you achieve, you achieve, you climb to the top of the ladder, you go to college, you get married, you work really hard, you buy the house that you go into debt to buy, and you never stop to think. Like, I'll speak for myself. Like, I never stopped to think and to question that at all, really, until I was probably in my 30s. And so they're just constantly questioning, why are you running yourself ragged? And they call it grind culture. Yeah, she's just constantly calling out, like, grind culture is not for you. It's trying to kill you, actually. Like, your body needs to rest. You're not a commodity. You're not what you produce. And so, yeah, that's the example that comes to the top of my mind, is just that calling out the commodification of our bodies as, like what Elisa said, expendable.
That's really good. Lindsay, something I have wondered, and I don't know, like, if you have wrestled with this too, but, you know, because of there being kind of this, like, racial component and how Black and brown bodies are historically and as we see today still commodified in even different ways than white people, I've wondered, like, is it okay? Like, am I appropriating by, like, following this account? You know what I mean? Like, is this for me? And I just wondered, like, have you thought that, and, like, what your thoughts are on that?
Wow. I have thought that. I think it's for me in the sense that I have absorbed those same ideas. And so I have more responsibility than my friends of color to dismantle white supremacy, I believe. And so following them helps me do that, because it helps me name, like, what I just said, like, grind culture, they would argue, is embedded in white supremacy and the idea that our bodies are commodified goods. And so I think I recognize. So when Beyonce's Lemonade album came out, follow me, this will make sense in just a minute. there was this really great article. There was a really great article written by a white woman, and I'll try to find it and we can put it in the show notes. But she was basically saying, like, look, white ladies, Lemonade isn't for you. You can still enjoy it, but it's not for you. And she used the analogy of her daughters having a birthday party. And so it's one daughter's birthday, and she gets the cake, and she gets the presents and all the celebration, but the other daughter gets to come to the party. So Lemonade was kind of like that, right? Like, it's not for me. It's not my party, but I get to enjoy it. And so I think of the NAP ministry in that same way. Like, their target audience, they're trying to liberate women of color from grind culture. I can also be at that party and enjoy the cake.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's a great analogy, because
isn't it?
Yes.
It's not my idea. I read it.
There's this comedian, and she's not PG at all, but she is a Black woman. Her name is Amanda Seales, and I literally follow. I'm 100% a fangirl, and she does these things called Smart, Funny, and Black, and they're like these showcases across the country where it's like part trivia and part old school jams and just part, but it 100% celebrates Black culture and the Black experience, and it is for Black people. But it's not like she's like, oh no, if you're not Black, you can't come. In her comedy, like, part of the reason why I never miss a podcast of hers or anything like that is because she somehow can be brilliant and also really funny. And I think that she does that, and she includes her ability to be hilarious. She has, like, a comedy special on HBO. She includes all that because it is joy and is a form of resistance, and it is mm-hmm. a form of care. And so I like, but sometimes I feel like a, what is that called when you show up and you're just like not supposed to be there? Gosh, I don't know what word I'm trying to say, but like, yes, an imposter, right? I feel like, oh my gosh, but that really helps me. That analogy really, really helps me. Like, this isn't for me, but I can still really enjoy it and also just like learn a ton.
Absolutely.
And there are spaces, just to say, that aren't for me to enjoy. Like, the cake isn't even for me. Right. Like, there are retreats and conferences and rooms I'm not going to enter because they're not for me. But I feel like the NAP ministry is an example, and Amanda is an example of, and Lemonade is an example of, like, I get to learn and I get to enjoy, and it helps me reject the grind culture and white supremacy. And yeah.
I think it's constant to reject the grind culture.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
I think that this whole last couple years of my life has been reminding myself that I do not have to grind myself to death so that mm-hmm. I have a house that is bigger than our need. Like, I just, it's constant. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
I mean, I feel like the name is really like dives into that. Like you can take a nap and you don't have to feel guilty. You can take a freaking nap.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. And I just feel like it reminds us of like God loves us whether we do a ton or nothing. Like, right. God loves us because we are God's beloved. Like, we mm-hmm. we reflect the image of God. And we, as people of faith and of Christian faith, like, claim to understand that. And then we just get like really lost along the way. And so we need that constant reminder. We need that rhythm of seeing it, like rest. We need that Sabbath. Like, we actually need it in our bodies and minds and souls. So
I love the like story of when Jesus is baptized and the dove appears and God speaks down and he says, "This is my son and I'm well pleased with him." And that was before Jesus's ministry. Like, Jesus hadn't done anything.
Oh, Lindsay. At that point. Oh, that is so great.
God's like, "I'm pleased with him already." And so that distortion of God's goodness that tells us rest isn't allowed or we're not good. Reality, God even called us very good before we did anything, you know? Right. So it's not in,
it's the lie it's of the empire that says, do what you are what you do, but God's kingdom mm-hmm. says you are who you are. And we need to remember that always. I do.
So good,
for sure.
Yeah, I had a really good conversation with a friend yesterday, and he's Jewish, and he observes Shabbat every Friday. And during quarantine, he's living with his parents right now, and they started like doing a Google group for Shabbat, so you can like join them on Zoom and do Shabbat even if you're not Jewish. And and I've been going. It's really lovely. It's been like so nice. And he didn't do it yesterday, and I was like, "Oh, I missed it." Like, no, I need my Shabbat. I love it. And he was like, "You know, like, Shabbat is meant to be like that feeling when you have this like really good meal, and there's wine on the table, and you can like languish, and you don't need to get up from the table, you don't need to run and like do the next thing, you just like enjoy the company, and you enjoy like the food and the wine, and you just like sit there for hours and talk and laugh." And he was like, it was really disruptive for my family to then be like, "Oh, we have to clean up. Like, we have to get on Zoom," or like, "Oh, Zoom finishes at like 8 o'clock and now it's too late to start cooking." And like, we want to be, you know, like his parents are a little older and they want to not be in bed at like 11 o'clock, or they want to be in bed by 11. And and it really made me think. Like, I was like, and I was joking with him, and I was like, "I demand more Shabbat." And then and I was like, "Oh, like maybe not," you know, and how. Yeah, I feel like I've also been trying to use quarantine. I don't nap on principle, and it's because I don't nap well. I can't fall asleep, and I need to nap for like 4 hours, and then I'm super tired and groggy, and it is not a good thing for my body. I also don't drink caffeine, but I do try and be intentional about like meals during, especially during quarantine, because they have the time for it. And by meals, I mean like talking to a friend or being, as I said, like with my partner if we're together, or even just by myself, like enjoying the time a little more, as opposed to being like, oh, I need to shove something down my throat because I'm like running to this next thing.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And it's been really beautiful.
I also want to plug another book while we're talking about it, and it's Bread for the Resistance by Donna Barber. And Donna is married to Leroy Barber, who Lindsay interviewed for Upside Down podcast a while back. It's mm-hmm. still an awesome episode and holds up. So go listen if you haven't. But it's this little devotional, and it has been so awesome to just have and flip through, because it is centered on like rest and resting in the Lord and resting in our physical bodies, because when you are in any sort of justice work, which, you know, I think we kind of all agree we all should be in some way, mm-hmm. but you'll get tired. We need to rest. And I just love this like last couple lines. When you face adversity, you can take courage. When you grapple with discouragement, you can find hope. When your legs are tired from marching and your knees are bruised from kneeling, you can experience rest and healing. I don't know. It's just been really nice for me to have, like, I haven't been doing it every day, because who can remember to do anything right now? But it's been such a blessing to just have and access. And yeah, I just really recommend it if you can get a copy. I think it's like $13 from IVP. So wanted to share that because it's been helpful to me.
Mm. Cool. Mm. Thanks for that, yeah. Kayla.
Yeah. So as we've talked about off air and now on air, COVID-19 has really kind of magnified so many of the inequalities that our neighbors have lived with for so long. Like, so many. It feels like even so small to even list them, but, you know, healthcare, inability to save because you're living paycheck to paycheck. Like, just generally, we're not caring for the vulnerable among us. And I don't know if there are specific things that come to mind when I ask, how can COVID-19 kind of force us into a new normal where we live like, you know, we really do belong to each other. and that's like a loaded question, because how do we even do it? So I'm like genuinely asking because I want to know, how do we do this?
Those are the best questions. I think I've been thinking about like a lot of these things we knew collectively, and a lot of things we're hiding, but in plain sight. So I've been thinking about what's the thing that we can't unsee, because like you said, there's so many things you can't even list them all as far as just cracks in our society and in our social structures that were there. So as individuals, we can't attack all of those, right? So we have to think about what's the thing that we're unwilling to allow on our watch. And I think the beautiful thing is that it's all connected. So when you commit to one area, say livable wages for everybody, then you're also ensuring that kids can eat 3 meals a day. And you're also keeping families from being evicted because they can't afford rent. And you're also affirming the inherent dignity in those workers. So the tragedy is that the layers of oppression people are being crushed by are multiple, right? But the beauty is that when we make progress in one area, there's relief in others. So I've kind of been thinking about that for myself, like, what's one of the areas that I'm now more aware of that I'm just not willing to let go on my watch? And how can I put my effort, resources, time, whatever there?
That's really good.
I've never even seen it like that, because that's part of the, I was talking to a friend online over text, and I was talking about how the work is it's paralyzing sometimes mm-hmm. because there's so much of it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And once that happens, you really do understand that it's everywhere and it's layered mm-hmm. and it's intentional, and that there's still work to keep it. There's still people actively working to keep it exactly as it is.
Yep.
And so when you combine all of that, it gets to be where you're like, nothing I do is going to help this because there's so much wrong here. We just need to start over. Control, Alt, Delete.
Yes.
But I think that seeing it like that is hopeful. And I think hope is what really, if my hope starts to shake and I start to lean towards despair, then that's when I get paralyzed. But if I can begin with hope and I can begin with seeing, hey, like this thread, just like this other thread, when you pull it, it all collapses. Like this thread that you're weaving and others are weaving, it has multiple effects of goodness, even if it's just in yes. one tiny way.
That's so encouraging. And it's also freeing for that, like, we don't have to, like, kill ourselves working yeah. on everything because no. it is all connected. So we do what's right in front of us and we don't have to be like, I need to be doing X, Y, and Z all the time and never be, you know, like, I think that's right. also really, yeah, there's some comfort to that connectivity. There's, yeah, it's like that both ends.
But I will say this. I will say this, though. That I'm really, really becoming passionate about. There is this, and I don't know if this is the same in Protestant circles as it is in Catholic circles, but there are, I have come to realize that there are Catholic circles that are kind of very much kind of looking inwardly, and the gaze is in becoming a more virtuous, more spiritual, more connected person to God. And I've kind of come to the place where I'm like, that's great, work on your spirituality, like, yes, consume scripture, deepen your prayer life, all of these things, but then pick something, like, go out and pick something. You ain't got to pick 100%. Everything you yeah. ain't got to pick all the things, but listen, that spirituality, it has to lead to something outside of yourself.
It's dead, right?
Yes.
Faith without work is dead.
Right. And I just don't understand. I just feel like relationship to Jesus means that you go and you work for justice. Absolutely. It has to be something related to justice. And I'm sure that there are going to be plenty of people who are like, yeah, really? Just, I mean, it could be over here and it could be over there. But I think at the end of the day, it all comes back to a more just and charitable society. So pick something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, I think that there's entire denominations that, Protestant denominations that lean into what they consider righteousness and holiness. And that's it. That's all you need to know. I'm saved and I'm going to heaven. So,
so too bad for you guys.
Yeah.
I agree, Elisa. And I think partially because I work for folks who are so much older, I also want to push back a little bit against like what could be taken as ableism of like go out and advocate. Like also there are so many ways to advocate like without going out at all. Like I know for a lot of my sisters who are homebound, and I mean literally like Catholic sisters, yeah, like just like writing petitions and emailing is like such a big deal. And for sisters who are like even not able to use a computer any longer or really not able to make calls, like I think it would be great for those of us who are able to do more, to do things in addition to prayer. But yeah, like I know prayer is like a lifeline. And so not only praying for like the people that you know or the people in your own life, but praying for like the world, right? And for like yes. justice and for clarity.
Yes. And I'm so glad that you bring that up because yeah, it does, it could like, I did sound like, get up and go to the mountains and like get on the front lines. I can't with you anymore. But yes, I just mean that there, our gaze has to turn outwardly. Like yes. literally yes. at the yeah. end of Mass, yeah. it's like, go live the gospel yeah. with your life. Like that's the literal last thing we hear. Because you know what, guys? I was there for a while, right? Like I was there like, oh, you know, totally like I need to be a better this and I need to like I need to be more forgiving and I need to, and all of that is true, but you, like we're never going to get to the most virtuous place that we need to be to go out and do good in the world. Like it's not going to happen. It has to be like you were saying, Kayla, like an and both. Mm-hmm. You can yeah. work on your connection to Jesus and you can turn your gaze outward and look at a world like that is in desperate need of love and hope and charity, all the things.
Yeah, that's so good. This conversation has been so great that I hate to even start like turning the corner to wind it up, but we know that our listeners won't stick with us for 3 hours, though. You know, we could make that an option.
Challenge accepted.
But so I would kind of, we had a lot of different ideas where this conversation could go, and I'm just so glad it went the way it did. But I want to ask, and I'll kind of ask this and then share my answer, give you some time to kind of process and think about, but just, who have you been learning from during this time? I'm not going to say like unprecedented time or uncharted waters. Those are the phrases we keep hearing. But who have you been learning from, and how have your eyes been opened? So I'll go first. And Gina, this actually relates to what you were saying, just kind of this idea of ableism, specifically in the church and spirituality and justice. As you know, I have 2 kids who are immunocompromised, and one who's also physically disabled. And I don't know what it is to be a disabled adult, but in this time, I've really like had, I don't know, scales fall off my eyes as I've been learning from, and digitally, just from Twitter, Stephanie Tate and Shannon Dingle, and they've just been sharing their perspective, which they have been sharing for a while, about what it has looked like and how they have not always felt welcome in the American church with their disabilities, and just kind of feeling like when they're watching these conversations go on about who should go out and when they should go out, that these are things that they have been bringing up for a long time. And these are conversations that they've already been having. And so I've just been really in like a listener and learning role, because I really feel like it matters, and it's not ever too late to acknowledge what we've done wrong so we can start doing it right. And so that's something that I'm hoping that the church pays attention to. You know, my husband is a pastor. How have we been alienating people who have different abilities, who have compromised immune systems? Like when we are projecting one way of doing church as being the right way, who else are we alienating, you know? And so it's just been really an interesting journey to learn from them.
I'd love for you. Are we gonna like link to all this? Because I'd love to learn from who you're learning.
Yes.
From y'all are,
yes,
learning.
No, we will from. Link to all of these.
Okay, good. I'm kind of sad, I guess, at the fact that during this time. No, it is sad. I'm crushed really at during this time to be learning even more from the Black community in the wake of the 2 tragedies. In the Black community that we know of right now, the 2 that are mostly
ones in the media.
Yes, right. And I think the thing that I've learned the most during COVID that I don't think I had a really great, I didn't have a handle on, and I'm getting a better understanding of, though I'll never come close to even really fully knowing, is just this idea of not transferring emotional or any sort of labor to the Black community when I'm trying to do better. And just being just highly aware of all the work. It was very interesting. I wrote a post kind of geared to Catholics, because apparently we're just now waking up, even though our bishops have documents on like racism. We have the stuff, but we just, anyway, that's a whole other podcast. I wrote something on Instagram, and somebody reached out to me, and she was like, "Do you have a Venmo? Because I know that that post took intellectual labor, and I'd like to give you a little something." And I was like, what? And so that just, so then I was like, I gave her like my favorite Black-led organization, and I was like, donate it there. But I now am like, okay, I love that. Like anytime I read something that I really learn something new or really moves me to be a better human being, and that person, because I've through this, I've found like a whole bunch of people that are just brilliant. And I'm like, I really like, I could be doing that. I can't add myself. Like, I can't be on everybody's Patreon. Like, I can't. But like, if something has clearly, like somebody has clearly put work into something to make me better when they don't really need to, because it's already hard enough just to exist in this country, like, then I can. Yeah. So like, I have learned during the last 8 weeks or so how much just first being Black in America just is what it is. And then on top of that, all the labor that goes into dismantling white supremacy by like the patience and the grace and the care and the writing and the podcast, all of that, it takes all sorts of energy. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been learning from Shannon D. Williams. She is a history professor at Villanova, and she is completing a book about Black nuns in the church in the U.S. And she wrote a really good article for America Magazine about Black nuns who ministered in the cholera epidemic. And I guess one of the archbishops in Baltimore had the option to have like multiple, you know, to call in multiple sisters to care for him when he was sick. And he called in the Black sisters, and they helped him. He got better. And then he called them in again, I think for someone on his staff or something. And they helped again, and they ended up dying. And he, in his will, he left money to another group of sisters that had nothing to do with them. Like, he basically just like erased them. And yeah, and so it's just one form of racism, or one of the ways racism plays out, is what I should say. But yeah, I've been following her closely and reading her writing about what does it mean to be erasing people now, and what actions can we take around that? And yeah, and I'm having her speak this month, which I'm so excited to learn from her in real time. It won't be in person, obviously. It'll be on Zoom. But Can I say more than one? I'm also reading Braiding Sweetgrass, which I recommended in the newsletter, and I'm just reading it really, really slowly. And it relates to everything about this conversation. It relates to rest and going slow and being in nature and breathing and thinking about our ancestors. And it's just like this beautiful read about being mindful.
I'm going to give a really off-brand answer and say my spiritual director. Because she asks me every week, what do you need? And I think kind of circling back to the rest conversation and production and value and worth and all of that, it's really easy to forget about what I need or to not pay attention to it. And I can't be outwardly focused, like Elisa was talking about earlier, if I'm not healthy first. And I'm one of those people who would just like pour out until I'm empty, and then I'm no good. So it's just been really refreshing and helping me reflect on what do I need, and then get really creative about how I can meet those needs in the midst of a global pandemic without the supports that I normally have, you know, for kiddos and relational supports and those kind of things. So I've been learning from my spiritual director. It's been invaluable to me during this time.
I keep saying I'm going to get one.
I know, me too.
Everybody I know says, do it. Just I know. Go and do it.
I know.
So good.
That's a good question for all of us. To ask and keep asking ourselves and the people around us. That's just so simple. And yet I think that can really help us right now and into the future. What do you need? So yeah. We had so much more that we could talk about. Maybe we'll just have to go onto Patreon and do another one of these and just go. But I just want to thank you all for being vulnerable and joining. And there's so much more, you know, we could say, but these are things that
we have been talking about in a lot of ways, even though we haven't been talking specifically pandemic related. I've just been thinking about all of the conversations we've had this season and all of the guests and the frontline work that all of those guests are doing, and how, you know, Lindsay, like, just like you said, it's all connected. And so I feel really grateful to have been a part of this season and get to talk with you all. And I just want to say again, thank you for being part of it.
Yes.
Yay.
Well, that's it for today. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. You can learn more at upsidedownpodcast.com or upsidedownpodcast on Instagram. And that's where we will tag all of these people so you can find them, but also in your podcast app, you will see all the show notes as well. And you are always welcome to join the Upside Down Together listener group on Facebook. That's open to everyone. You just ask to be approved and we'll add you. We ask a couple questions to make sure you're not a bot. but we can process these episodes kind of through the lens of God's Upside Down Kingdom. And before we go, since this is the last episode of the season, which feels so weird to say, I just want to give an extra shout out to our friends who are supporting us at any tier on Patreon, but specifically today, give an extra thank you to those friends who are giving at the highest monthly level, especially in these times where I know money is just really weird. We really, really appreciate you. Like, without you, we would not be able to exist. We couldn't do it without you. So thank you to Lana, Heather, Tracy, Tess, Catherine, Erica, Holly, Brittany, Deshauna, and Carol. Thank you so much. And we will see you over at Patreon this summer and back in the fall for season 5. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Upside Down Podcast. New episodes are released on the 2nd and 4th Tuesday of each month. The Upside Down Podcast is created by Lindsay Wallace, Kayla Craig, Elisa Molina, and Gina Siliberto. Our show notes are written by Lana Smith. Johnny Craig and Tess Malone edit the episodes, and our theme music is Dreamer's Act by DJ Sean P. And of course, our monthly patrons make everything possible.